Welcome to the Guardian Mindset Podcast, presented by attorney Eric Daigle.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to our next edition of the Guardian Mindset Podcast. And again, I'm still happy to come to you from the 2024 FBI LEADA, which is the Law Enforcement Executive Development Association Leadership Conference, which is being held in San Antonio, Texas. And we've had a really great week of leadership, of classes, and of networking and interaction. I don't get to interact with my next guest enough, and I wish she lived a little closer to me so I could. But that means that we would play a lot of golf and we would have a lot of Friday nights and cocktails. So, but I would like to take an opportunity to introduce you all listeners, to Chief Donna McNamara. Donna is the police chief of Stoughton, and I finally can say that right after many years, Stoughton, Massachusetts. She's had a long and interesting career, and I had an opportunity to start interacting with her probably over a decade ago as she was making her way through the ranks of Stoughton Police Department and all the way up to being the chief in Stoughton. And what's amazing to me, and so first I'd like to say, welcome, Chief. How are you?
Thank you for having me, Eric.
I'm always happy to have you. I've had the honor and privilege of the last year working as a general counsel for the board under Donna's leadership, and it's been an amazing adventure. And even though she doesn't leave the board as of today, and she takes on her new role as the past president, and I still have one more year with her, watching her work through the board and then working underneath her was phenomenal. So let me just give you a little bit of background on her, and then we'll jump right in. And everybody loves when you read the background, right?
Sure. That's
always the best, right? So Chief Donna McNamara began her criminal justice career in 1996 with the Norfolk County Sheriff's Office as a deputy sheriff and a correction officer. And she was hired by Stoughton Police Department in 2001 as a police officer. She has made her way up through the whole organization, serving in many roles from detective, patrol sergeant, lieutenant, and then her appointment to interim chief. In 2017, she was made the permanent chief of Stoughton. And Stoughton is a Massachusetts accredited police agency. She has a master's degree in criminal justice from Curry College and a bachelor's of science in criminal justice from Westfield State University. She has, and I even think that this year was pretty cool, and some of the stuff you did in Dubai and the things that we'll talk a little bit about. But she has attended the Harvard Kennedy School Executive Education Women in Power Leadership in a New World, as well as the International Association of Chiefs of Police Women's Leadership Institute and a New England Law Enforcement Executive Development Seminar. So the key part is I think she brings multiple facets to a ever-developing world. And you know, we've had a couple of amazing female police chiefs on this show, because one of the things that I strongly believe in is that, you know, I'm a guy. I can provide guys guidance and mentorship, but I want to say, as a father of daughters, that I get to try to provide mentorship to the new female officers that we have, and the ladies deserve that mentorship. But one of the things is clear is we didn't have a history of that mentorship in law enforcement, and so I love the fact that you bring that as kind of your platform and your slate of what you're doing in law enforcement. So right off the bat, before we even dive in, I want to say thank you for that, because, even ladies like my daughters are inspired by the leadership of strong women leaders like yourself, who you know, in a world where, as you were raising up, it was not, it was a difficult outcome, and that's unfortunate, but really thank you for your interaction there.
Well, I'd have to say that I've been fortunate throughout my career to have some great mentors that led the example, paved the way for me coming into my career in both corrections and in the police department, and fortunate enough to see how they were operating and how difficult it was for them, and I don't want it to be difficult for female officers that are coming in the career now. It is a different challenge in our career, and if there's ever an opportunity to help them, I'm there for them.
So I gave the formal overview of your career, but why don't you give just to the listeners who are paying attention as to, you know, the highlights that you say of coming to where you are today?
Well, when I became a corrections officer, that was, you know, I was utilizing that as a stepping stone to become a police officer. My goal after getting my bachelor's degree was to get on a police department. But in the 90s, it was very competitive to become a police officer.
Very competitive.
So I took the, you know, the opportunity that was presented to me, which was to go on the sheriff's department and learn a job that I thought would benefit me as a police officer. And I think if you are a good corrections officer, you are a phenomenal police officer.
That's a pretty interesting statement. I like that.
It teaches you the opportunity to communicate. That's all you have is your senses when you're in a correctional setting. And if you are astute with your senses, you will be better in the street when you come a patrol officer.
And, you know, we talk about this de-escalation nowadays, but boy, you learned that in its very infancy, didn't you?
So my corrections career was in a male facility. So we housed male inmates, detainees, and yeah, I'm 5'2", so I'm not going to overpower them. So I had to use the skills that I had, which was de-escalation, interpersonal skills. You know, before it was a common theme, that's what it was called.
Right.
Interpersonal skills.
Nothing new.
Nothing new. It's just, you know, rephrased. And interacting with people, showing them respect. They are human beings that made mistakes in their lives. And most of the inmates, detainees that I would deal with, were going to go back out into society. So kicking them when they were down and incarcerated was not going to benefit society in that way. So treating them as a human being with respect, you know, there's times when that didn't happen, you know, in reverse. And you try to use the skills that you have. You know, that's also paying attention to what's going on in your surroundings.
Right.
When you're inside the facility.
Right.
And it led me to becoming a training officer within the sheriff's department, which helped and gave me additional skills and just made me a better candidate when I was given the opportunity to become a police officer for the town of Stoughton.
Right. And so when you started with Stoughton, you know, you've had some years there. And you watched the town and it go through good and bad.
Yes.
And indifferent.
We've had our challenges in my community. And starting in that, and I was actually hired on a grant that hired two female officers. Initially in 2001. And then, you know, shortly after graduating the academy, 9/11 happened. And, you know, there was concern at that time in law enforcement that there might be layoffs. There was, you know, huge concern about that. Fortunately enough, that didn't happen in my community. But our lives changed after that day.
And then you've even worked through I call it the love of Massachusetts after the marathon bombing, because you're pretty close to Boston.
Yes.
And very interactive in Boston area, right?
Yes.
And so you saw, and this is an interesting part from your perspective, because especially in Massachusetts, you know, one of the things I say all the time when, and you've probably heard me because you've come to a lot of my training classes, and happy to have you at the summits, and you're very supportive of the DLG function, and I really appreciate that. But what I always say, I wish our highs were not so high and our lows were not so low. You know, we're either the best or the worst. And boy, in Massachusetts, you've really saw that, haven't you?
Yes, we have. To witness what took place after the marathon bombing and the capturing of those, we'll just say it's gentlemen that were the committers of that crime. They did what they did, but our city came together to shut down and allow the law enforcement to do what they had to do and support. I mean, to witness people standing on the side of the road as they were driving through the city after the capture was incredible. And we've had those highs and we have had unfortunate lows. You know, we were a city, I would say the city of Boston did rather well during the summer of 2020 with all the demonstrations.
Yeah.
It was through partnerships with the city of Boston and local police departments that working together that helped our communities get through that.
Yeah. And so what would you identify in your wonderful experience as one of the most significant developments in policing as you've gone through the ranks?
Well, I think today we need to be more mentorship values for the newer officer. So the generation that's coming in today, you know, when we were in policing, it was show up this day, you're going to the academy, and you had very little information.
Here's your keys, here's your car, have a great day.
So now we have, you know, field training programs that are developed, you know, mentorships while they're going through the academy, giving them the opportunity to know people within the department is going to help give a greater framework for those officers coming in, and then continuing that mentorship with veteran officers is key to the success of the new generation of police officers.
And what I love for you and what I love about you is that you have made the development of professionalism a core structure in your career. And I find you know, there's a choice. It's a choice if you want to continue to learn. It's a choice if you want to continue to develop. And, you know, how did you get into recognizing the importance of the development of professionalism in your career?
I would say would be my first mentor in the Sheriff's Department, because he had such a big training foundation. He instilled that. So, and it was, you know, take on challenges and maybe something that you thought you would, you know, I became an EMT because he said, you know, I thought that would be a good road to developing myself to becoming a police officer. Well, once I got that EMT license, my mentor, ADS Boomhauer, he said, hey, would you be interested in becoming a first responder CPR trainer? I was a new officer only in the department for a couple of years. I'm going into the veterans in service and getting up in front of people and communicating and talking about the skills and why it was important for them to learn these skills. It wasn't just about when they would maybe need to use it when they're in their function as a corrections officer, but the importance of knowing how to do those skills for their family.
Right.
When they're on their own time.
Absolutely.
So it was getting them to buy into the importance of the training. And sometimes I've taken training classes and been asked to become a trainer in something that, you know, may not have interested me at first, but once I dove into it, it becomes a passion, and learning new skills gives you a wider variety of importance.
Yeah. So I have a couple of questions that I usually like to ask on the podcast, and obviously the one of the ones that I'm very in tune to is that the young officers starting out today are not us, good or bad. They don't want to be us, and sometimes we don't want them to be us. Right? We want them to be better. We want to make this industry better. And if I was a young officer that just came to you, and one thing I know about you is you would sit down with any young officer any day of the week, but hopefully we get to more this way, and said, you know, hey, Chief, I'm a young officer, male or female. What advice do you give me on my career? What should I be paying attention to?
I think being willing to take on tasks within your organization that may lead to other things. So being able to take a lateral step. You know where you want to go, but you might have to take a left or a right-hand turn and laterally step into a position to do something for your organization. We're doing more with less in every department right now. So be willing to take on additional tasks or fine-tuning some skills in something else so you can bring it back to your organization, I think is a key to success, maybe leading to what you ultimately want. So if you want to be a detective, but, you know, your department's looking for background investigators to help out the detective unit, take that and run with it. Take opportunities that you may lead you to other things.
Yeah, it's great advice. Let's move to the next level, though, because that's you know my shtick, and that is the first line supervisors, the bread and butter, and I think it's a more difficult job now than it's ever been. And you know our supervisors they got a lot on their plate, and so when you promote a first line supervisor in your department, and if they're willing and ready to listen to some guidance, what advice do you give them?
So we try to set a core classes that they attend. We try to identify people that have either taken promotional exam or exhibited, you know, that mannerisms of being a supervisor without a title, and we try to give them some classes early on. Different companies and different instruction. But we obviously send them to FBI leader classes, but we start them off with that foundation. supervisors have to be able to communicate up and communicate down. So the importance of making sure that that isn't filtered, right? So
right.
It's getting the message and walking the walk that is very difficult. And as a first-line supervisor, you're speaking up to your lieutenants and you're speaking down to your patrol officers.
Yep.
And making sure that that is the message is being set.
Yeah, I mean, that's honest communication up and down the chain of command has always been important. And for you, watching different police chiefs in different parts of the country, I always say that some of the most difficult areas to be a police chief is in a New England area or a West Coast area. Just not that everybody doesn't have difficulties and challenges, but yours are added with strong unions, very vocal communities. Massachusetts just starting to get a post, trying to keep a standards applicant and trying to keep everybody moving in the right direction. So, and while you've been a police chief now, I think I always say the life of a police chief is what nowadays? We don't even know. It's not long.
It's not long.
Right? And we deal with that on the board. Like, how do we get people on the board that they're going to last 6 years? But now you're a veteran now, and I'm sure you've had to mentor new police chiefs that are coming on board. And what advice would you give them as they started their venture? Besides, don't do it.
Yeah. It's a challenge. When I started as a lieutenant, I went on to the day shift, and that was a big adjustment for me because I was always the evenings, and going from a evening shift and you can do your errands and things during the day, that was a big adjustment. Well, when I went into administration and going into a role of Monday through Friday, big changes. You're not running out on the calls. You have to learn to let your staff take care of those calls and do the administrative. And that is difficult at first, that transition into the administrative role. I enjoy my job. It is a very stressful job. And it is something that I would say it's 3 to 5, two to three, years in the position as a chief. That's the rate that it's been going lately, 2 to 3 years. And that's not a very long time to get some things accomplished in your organization. As a new chief, take it one day at a time. Yeah. You're not going to be able to get everything done in the day and know that you can pick it back up.
Right.
The difficult part about a chief's job is no one else does our job. You may have someone take over for a little while in your absence for a short period of time, but the majority of the work, you're going to come back to it. And it's a marathon, not a sprint.
It's a great way to look at it. I do want to get to a little leader stuff, and I know we only have a couple more minutes because we have a big guest to meet. The challenge, as we know, is policing with the community and the interaction with the community after the ups and downs that we've gone through. Over the years of your interaction with the community, have you formed any opinion on how departments and officers can work better with the community?
I think our new officers come to our profession with a different perspective. So, policing has changed so much in my career, but I would say that, they're not going to police the way we policed when we first began because society has just changed.
Right.
And so the newer officers don't know how it used to be. They only know how it is right now. So they learn the way that we need to police communities because they're in that community. They come from that community. There's more technology now. So they're more comfortable with the technology and the advances in law enforcement. And, they're going to be more comfortable with AI. But the bread and butter of our occupation and our profession is our interaction with our communities.
Right,
and we've experienced it here in San Antonio, how fantastic the police department is with interacting with the people that are visiting the city. We've been warmly welcomed by all the police department members, and it has been fantastic. And that's a testament to Chief McManus and his supervisors and how they run their department.
Yeah, I would agree 100%. And so you just finished your year as president. It was a lot, whirlwind.
Yes.
What was some of the highlights and some of the things that you took away, most not just for what's good for the organization, but we know it's always good for our organization to have good leadership. But what did you as a person take away from your year as president?
I am absolutely humbled and honored to have been representing this organization this past year. The first thing I was able to do was, and it was so meaningful, was to be able to read the names of police we'd done the candlelight vigil.
Yeah.
That was an incredible experience to sit on the stage and experience the candlelight vigil. Something I'll never forget. Thankfully, I had a nice tall police chief that was standing next to me, so he had a great picture of it. And looking out over the mall with the candlelight, that was one of the first things. And one of the last things that I had the pleasure of doing was representing us, FBI leader in Dubai, and doing some presentations to the UAE and Dubai Police Department on what we are and our organization, what we can do for their organization.
I heard your trip was a whirlwind over to Dubai, but what did you see about their law enforcement and how they run things out there?
Well, there's no shortage of money over there, so they have some very fancy cars that are adorned with all of their logos. And they are very much futuristic. They have a museum over there that's just about the future of where life will be in 50, 70 years. And they're already using drone technology, which they showcased. They'll launch a drone from a location where there is a call for service as officers are responding in cruisers. So if they can get a video of it and send it back to the central location and provide the officers with technology and what is happening before the officers even arrive.
That's amazing.
So instead of just using the communication of what's being reported, they're launching drones in order to bring back that information.
That's great. I mean, we saw your presentation on it, and the fact that they were very receptive and very willing to interact and share information with the United States law enforcement in the interaction. That's your opinion?
Yeah. I think for them, they sent some people to different training throughout the United States, but if we can, I thought it would be very interesting if they were able to, and as I said, there's no shortage of money over there. The finances of being able to send first-line supervisors to maybe sit in a classroom in the United States in one of our leader classes and get the interaction of what our police officers are doing is a benefit to them.
Yep.
They have a lot of tourists in their city in Dubai, and so they're dealing with all walks of life and all beliefs and religions. And so, I think it would be a benefit for both FBI leader and for them.
It would definitely be a benefit for any time we interact with individuals at police in a different area is always very, very beneficial. And so now you transition to the past president, take a big deep breath and still be able to do some things, but have one more year on the board and I'm happy about that and they continue progressing along. Looking forward to the next board member, Chief Joel Fitzgerald, coming on board next. And so let me ask you with this one, just based on your experience as we bring this to an end, so as you sit here with your history, what does the future of law enforcement look like to you? And maybe it's going to be from your neck of the woods, the Massachusetts area, but what does law enforcement look like to you?
I think it's ever changing. Unfortunately, I think we're going to have to continue to do more with less, and maybe that's where technology will be the assistance to us. So if we have unfortunate recruitment and retention right now into our profession, so if we have less people, we're going to have to use technology to assist us.
Right.
That is the future. We're starting to see AI come out in law enforcement, and that's just the beginning of it. So I'm interested to see where that goes.
Yeah. Yeah. We've already started doing some work on it on my side. Obviously, we have some concerns.
Yes.
But I do think that we have to figure out a way to do more with less. And we've used that term all the time, but it's real right now.
It's real right now.
Yeah. Well, I thank you for your time. I thank you for your leadership and the opportunity and the support that you've given not only me as the general counsel for the board, but also DLG and sending your people through our training. So I appreciate that. Thank you very much.
I believe in what you do for training, and it has been phenomenal training over the years, and I will continue to send people to your training. It's top notch.
All right.
And I encourage a lot of people to go to your classes. that have never had the opportunity to go. And I think it helps our industry throughout the country.
Well, I thank you for that. I appreciate you a ton. With that, I'll bring this to a close and end as we always do. Help those who need your help. Protect those who need your protection. And most importantly, please keep yourself and others safe. Have a good day. The Guardian Mindset Podcast is sponsored by the DLG Learning Center. You can find us at www.dlglearningcenter.com. On the Learning Center, you can find an extensive library of articles, webinars, and online training. Listen, if you find the podcast informative, I'd recommend checking out our weekly Path of the Guardian video training and our monthly supervisory continued education program. These programs can be purchased by single users or department-wide. And if you want easy access to articles and information, please download the Daigle Law Group app through either your Apple App Store or your Google App Store. And remember, help those who need your help, protect those who need your protection, and most importantly, keep yourself and others safe. Thank you.